Welcome in to It's Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom. It's 2024. I'm Austin. Find me on Twitter /X at Real Bird Lawyer, on Blue Sky at Bird Law Expert. Here with me, as always, my co-host Taylor at Taylor _Witt on Twitter /X, on Blue Sky at Taylor M. Witt. What's going on, pal?
We're back. It was December 21st the last time we put out an
episode.
Yeah,
so, we should probably address that. There was a game that was played on Christmas Day, and we were enjoying spending time with our respective families. I was in Kansas City, and we got to hang out a little bit. We did not watch the game together because we were spending time with our families on Christmas Day, and the Chiefs ruined Christmas for me, and we didn't really want to record a podcast.
No, weren't in the mood.
You know, we took some time off for the holidays, and we are back better than ever for 2024. But because we did not record a podcast last week, we do have to bring everybody up to speed on the listener leagues. If you don't care about the listener leagues, you can fast forward for, you know, 20 or so minutes. I'm joking. It's not going to take that long. But we got to shout out the listeners who played in our three listener leagues, all of which have now come to a conclusion, starting with our redraft league. In the semifinals, Z-Man, who had already clinched promotion to our Dynasty League, because we're doing a whole promotion relegation thing between our Dynasty League and our Redraft League, and it's super badass, finishing first in scoring, projected to win 124-120, laid an absolute egg to German Chief. He loses 64-120. I know the feeling, bro, because I had two number one seeded highest scoring or second highest scoring teams, and they both lost in the semifinals, so my condolences, but German Chief prevailing and going to the Super Bowl in his first fantasy season ever. And on the other side of the bracket, we had Doughy Fresh prevailing over Volk in a barn burner, 155-148.
Really?
So, I mean, a crazy game, went down to the wire, super high scoring. You love to see that kind of stuff, unless you're on the losing side, which, you know, again, condolences to Volk. But that's a stage for a true underdog story, you know, a rookie fantasy manager playing in a Super Bowl for the chance to earn promotion to our Dynasty League. I mean, he literally just learned how redraft works, and now he's going to have to learn how Dynasty works, because he came through with a 139-85 win. Now, we haven't been saying his name on the pod, because every time we did, he would go into a little bit of a slump, a little bit of a nosedive. But German
early Chief, in the year, we shouted him out, and he then immediately went on a three-game losing streak, and it wasn't working. So then you,
and then he worked his way back.
And you were going to bring him up before again. The playoffs, and you were like, I'm going to go ahead and say remains nameless, and it worked.
His first four draft picks this year were Nick Chubb, who went down in week two, Justin Herbert, Keenan Allen, and Ramondre Stevenson. Those were his first four picks in his first fantasy draft ever. Okay.
Yeah.
None of those guys suited solid up picks for him in the Super Bowl,
but
he won by 55 points.
Yeah.
I mean, he won a blowout. I mean, 120-64 and 139-85 in his last two playoff games without his first four draft picks. I mean, that's crazy. Now, German Chief, if you're listening, I hope you are. Understand that this is
Timo's a huge listener. He messages me when we talk about it. Shout out, Timo. You've been great.
Timo, I just, one word of advice, this will not always happen. In fact, it will probably never happen to you again. You'll probably never win anything in fantasy again. Sure. You're probably thinking right now, this is so badass and so cool, I'm going to win Dynasty Super Bowl next year. You probably won't, but congratulations to you, because that is an amazing, incredible showing for your first fantasy season ever. Turning to the Dynasty League. Oh, buddy, this was one of the two teams that I had the number one seed and went down in the semifinals. And
yeah.
Let's talk about the other side of the bracket first. In like Flint, took down the top scoring team, Dennis's team, DPOSJ, 150-126. Dennis talked a ton of smack, and he knew that this
Dennis
was coming
is a major fantasy heel. He's great at
it. He's a major fantasy heel. We love it. Unfortunately for him, he was defeated in the first round, or the second round. He didn't have to play in the first round because he didn't have a bye, and he loses to In Like Flint. And then on the other side of the bracket, we had, for both bragging rights and for a chance to go to the first Dynasty Super Bowl, a matchup between you and me. And this matchup was so tragic for me.
We both hated it.
I feel like because of what happened to you the week after it happened to me, we can share in the misery here. But this all started with a fateful decision by me to bench Puka Nacua on Thursday Night Football because I had Kyren Williams. I didn't want to have like all of my eggs in the Rams Thursday Night Football basket. Like I don't, yeah. I don't want to have two of
my
most important players.
They've got,
right.
They've got kind of Saints a feisty defense. Yeah.
Saints have a really good defense. Like I didn't, there was a chance that that game could have gone terribly for me and those guys could have combined for like 15 points and I didn't want to do it. And I had Michael Pittman and Jaden Reed available or so I thought. So Puka on my bench scores 32 points. The next day, Michael Pittman does not clear concussion protocol, right? Which, like, I still haven't adjusted to this, but now it feels like concussions, you're almost always missing 1 week. It used to be that guys would clear concussion protocol like 98% of the time.
I agree.
And I guess I was just behind the times. You know, it's the week of Christmas. I'm at home. I'm maybe not paying quite as much attention as I would normally do. Spending time with family, whatever. It's the holidays. And so, all right, Michael Pittman's out. That's fine. Puka scored 32 points on my bench. Michael Pittman's out. Whatever. I you know, next man up. I have Jaden Reed. He's been really good. You know, he's been extremely hot for the Packers.
Yes.
Yeah. He was also declared out. He missed one game. And then, by
the
way,
let me just point out that
next week.
Right, because this is a dynasty league too, we cannot just go to the waiver wire like a redraft league and go pick up some wide receiver that's probably going to get 8 to 10
there's
or whatever. You just have
waivers.
To deal with whoever you're looking at your bench, whoever you've got. So,
and you know, because my team is so good, I mean, like, listen, I just named off like three really good young wide receivers, right? Like, my team is crazy, and this is a problem that I had all year. It was really hard to make lineup decisions when you have. You know, I mean, my other wide receivers were Justin Jefferson and Deebo Samuel. So, like, you know, why wouldn't you just play all of those guys? Well, it's because I had a great team. All right. We had a great year. But all of a sudden, I'm starting Josh Downs in a do or die, win or go home game. And I was down huge. Like, I was, you know, like projected like 9% chance to win. And then Rashee Rice and Devontae Adams went out and combined. For 11 points. And you
for
went
me,
from
by
being,
the way, that's
for
the
you,
context
for
there.
You.
Yeah.
You went from being like a 91% favorite to me needing 10 points from Deebo Samuel on Monday night. On Christmas, Christmas night to win this matchup and go to the Super Bowl. And I thought, there's no way Debo's not scoring 10 points in this game. You know, it's a huge game. They're playing against the Ravens. They'd love going to Deebo in these big spots. He scored 100 fantasy points over the last
His previous four games was 22, 35, 33, 21.
I mean, long story short, he scored 9.1. You advanced to the finals, and you encountered a very similar tragic brand of heartbreak.
Man, this was rough. So I'm playing in like Flint, and things start off really, really, really well for me. I'm up big. You know, he's congratulating me in the chat after the Chiefs game. So I had Rice and he comes back from his stinker the previous week to score 17 in that game, which was huge. Devontae Adams, who had 1 point against you, had 34.6 in this game and just went nuts at Indianapolis in a loss, which is even great for me. I hate owning a Raider because I don't want to cheer for them.
Sure,
but like if Devontae Adams is going to go nuts and they're going to lose a crucial game that eliminates them from the playoff contention. Like, yeah, exactly. But tragically, Derrick Henry and Tony Pollard, two of the later running backs in this game, had 6 and 9 points. And I'm going into Sunday Night Football, the last Sunday Night Football the last game of week 17 since there was no Monday night. And all I needed was I was up 20 projected points against Jordan Love and Aaron Jones, and I had Romeo Doubs for the Packers. So I just needed them to not go nuclear. And then in the first half, I go from a 20-point lead to like a 4-point lead or whatever it was. Jordan Love had 3 touchdown passes in the first half. Aaron Jones ran all over him. They never threw to Romeo Doubs. So I went from literally celebrating my Dynasty Super Bowl and you and I talking about being Super Bowl bros. You won the cutthroat league. Oh, sorry, spoilers. But and I had the Dynasty Championship in my grasp, in like Flint had given up, you know, graciously in the chat.
Sure.
And
I mean, this was like, you know, political candidate, like conceding the election.
It was. And he only ends up winning by 1.2. It was 133.0 to 134.2. So
and we should mention, you know, in an eerie parallel to what happened to me, you had Raheem Mostert get declared out for the Dolphins. Like
yes,
Sunday
yes. That's why I was
after he'd been
flexing
practicing.
Romeo Doubs instead of Raheem Mostert. I had you know, Justice Hill on the bench, who had already played, who had 22, and I could have, you know, maybe done something there, but no, I had to, yeah, it was really, really tough. And that's kind of the way she goes. Congrats, major, major congrats to Inlike Flint, who had a good year and, you know, pulls it out in the Super Bowl and ends his first dynasty year with a big chunk of change, because, this is a pretty, we don't play for nothing. We don't play for peanuts around here. No. So, congrats to him. Congrats to everyone in that league. Relegation, our guy Tojo Kaká, super, super good, you know, participant, has been playing with us since we started fantasy. He just had a really, really tough year and was one of the two guys that got relegated. But very happy to welcome in Z-Man and German Chief to next year's Dynasty League, and just really excited for everything that happened this year. A lot of good participation from you guys, and can't wait to keep this thing going.
You already spoiled the outcome.
I did. My bad.
But I got to say, there was very little drama in our cup league.
Like, there was.
We started with 16 teams. The lowest scoring team every week got cut. All their players went to the waiver wire. And I kind of had a feeling like midway through the season that I was going to win this league. But like, you can't count your chickens at that point. Like, this is an insane league where if you have the lowest score in any given week, you're out. And there was one week where I was on the chopping block, where I was the next man up for elimination, and it was the week that you got eliminated. We finished lowest and second lowest that week, and you happened to finish slightly lower than me. And this finals, unfortunately for Dr. Weiss, as I like to call him, did not go well for him. We had a 2-week final in this league, and you know, it was down to two teams, so obviously the rosters were insane. But he was facing Justin Fields, Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts, Rashad White, Christian McCaffrey, crucially,
CeeDee Lamb, who
went absurd, AJ Brown, Raheem Mostert, Travis Etienne, won the first week by 40, won the second week by 20 for a 60-point victory, but he fought hard. Unfortunately, this is winner take all, so he went home with no cash, and I went home with the entire prize pool, which was great for me. It did take a little bit of the sting out of the fact that my two dynasty teams were both the number one seed and they both got eliminated in their first game. Not completely, still pretty upset about that, but it was nice to take the inaugural IASIC Cutthroat Crown. We got a great show for you guys today. We got news, we got what is happening, and then we are going to be joined by our good friend Dan Harms for a recap of Chiefs versus Bengals, and then a little bit of season in review, a little bit of playoff talk, so we'll get into that as well. But first, in injury news, not that this is incredibly important, because the Chiefs obviously are going to be resting many of their starters this week, having clinched the AFC West and being locked into the three seeds. You know, sometimes things just work out. Chris Jones has a groin injury. He did not practice on Wednesday or Thursday. Isaiah Pacheco with his quad and shoulder injuries did not practice on Wednesday, but was limited today. Rashee Rice, little hamstring, didn't practice either day. Le'Jarius Sneed didn't practice either day. Kadarius Toney, limited participant, and then didn't practice on Thursday. Donovan Smith, full participant, DNP. So that might be a little bit of, you know, a veteran rest day or something like that. But it's interesting. Obviously, there's some major players on here that were either limited or did not participate on Thursday. Chris Jones, Travis Kelce, Le'Jarius Sneed, Rashee Rice. I mean, those are four of the six most important players on the team. By the way, Patrick Mahomes also listed on the injury report with an ankle injury, but he was a full participant both days. So, you know, it's fortunate that things broke the way that they did for the Chiefs to not have to play on Sunday to secure anything, because, you know, Andy Reid, if there was a chance at a higher seed, he doesn't care about the gamesmanship. He's not going to look at which team is the sixth seed, which team's the seventh seed. He doesn't care about that. If there's a chance for the Chiefs to earn a higher seed, he would absolutely be playing to win that game. But because there isn't, Chiefs are going to rest their starters. They essentially get a bye.
It's okay. It's considering what the Chiefs have been through this year, getting a bye, quote unquote, before the playoffs start is the best news they could have done. I mean, literally, what's funny is, you know, the reason that they're locked in the three is because they can't get the two, because if Buffalo gets it, they have the head-to-head over the Chiefs. And if the Dolphins get it, they'll have one more win. And then they can't drop to the four because the Jags, who are the only team that – I mean, the Chiefs played them and beat them. So even if they tied them in wins, the Jags lose the head-to-head. And then the other teams that are fighting for the four, the other two South teams, don't have the wins. So it was a perfect storm where, you know, if the – let's say you just flop the results and the Chiefs had beaten the Bills and lost to the Jags the other way, you know, and they still have the same exact win-loss record. Now they could go from the two to the four if things break differently, and they would have to play this final game just to slot themselves in. So, like, I like having the week, and especially given what this injury report looks like, give me the week to rest all these guys for sure.
Not only that, but we should mention that the Chiefs played five opponents in a row where the opponent had more rest days than them, which hasn't happened in like 45 years.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, in December, I should say. I'm sure it happens early in the season, but five consecutive opponents where the Chiefs were at a rest disadvantage. I mean, it's kind of hard because a lot of times, I mean, you're just playing Sunday to Sunday. A lot of times you're just, I mean, most of the time the teams are going to have the same amount of rest.
Schedule-wise, it's hard to line up five in a row.
It's really hard to line up five in a row when you consider the primetime opportunities and everything like that. Somehow the Chiefs were playing five straight games with negative rest, and now they will, you know, I mean, frankly, they deserve to get a bye after that stretch. Mm-hmm. So here we are. In other news, former Lions defensive tackle Isaiah Bugs signs with the Chiefs practice squad. I don't know much about this guy, so what can you tell me about Isaiah Bugs?
Yeah, he was a defensive tackle from Alabama that was drafted in 2019 by the Pittsburgh Steelers and then kind of bounced around. He played 2 years there, or I guess three, 19, 20, and 21. He was a brief Raider in 2021 at the end of that run. And then the Lions had him in 22 and 23 this year. And then they just sent him on his way this year and the Chiefs picked him up. What I mean, look, I looked him up, his relative athletic score, as we always do when we pick up a player, see how athletic the guy is, even if he, you know, it's poor. He had a 1.91. He was not very many of his splits were good. Now, maybe the other thing is, you know, the relative athletic score is testing time out of college, and he might have had some poor testing, or, you know, you never really know what's going through these guys' mind. Maybe he was nervous, but, you know, he is he's a guy that he's 6 foot three or 6.3 feet. So 6 foot and a third of an inch and 300 pounds. So kind of a space eater in the middle there in the defensive tackle. I don't know really if the Chiefs brought him in just for, I assume, just practice squad depth at this point. They've got some guys already kind of that they're working in on the defensive line. So should be fine there. But just transaction news, we're in the dog days here at the end of the season where the Chiefs aren't going to play. So that was really the only thing going on with the roster.
Let's talk about
what is happening.
Obviously, the number one seeds got clinched last week in both conferences. Ravens winning, 49ers winning. They both clinched the number one seed and their respective byes. But there are still five different possible playoff opponents that the Chiefs can play. Let's go through those really quick. And you put this all together, so I'm going to let you take the lead on this one.
So we have the games this weekend. The ones that matter for the Chiefs are four games. You start off at 3:30 on Saturday with Steelers at Ravens. That one's really interesting because the Ravens are going to be resting Lamar. The Steelers are going to be playing, hoping to get into the playoff picture with some help. You know, certainly could see the Steelers taking that game a lot more seriously than the Ravens and pulling that one off. And then on the Monday Night Football broadcast crew is going to be doing Saturday Night Football, Texans at Colts for a playoff spot. Winner this, it's a playoff game. Winner this one gets into the playoffs, the loser doesn't. It, depending on what the Jags do, the winner might win the AFC South, but they wouldn't know that until the next day. Really interesting matchup there. The Chiefs are certainly looking at that winner as a potential wild card opponent. And then on Sunday, the two that matter is a noon kickoff between the Jags and Titans. And if the Jags win that, they win the South and they're the four seed. But if they lose that, it opens up the door for the Texans and the Colts. The Jags might miss the playoffs if they lose that game. So they certainly have to take care of business there. And then the mother load, the Sunday Night Football matchup, the last regular season game of the year, Bills at Dolphins for the AFC East in classic Bills fashion. The Bills could be a two if they win this game, and if certain things happen, they could be out of the playoffs if they lose this game. So they're going – I mean, that's as big of a swing basically as you can possibly have, because there's no way you're going to either be playing for the one or to get kicked out. But that's crazy.
It's unbelievable. I don't know that I've ever –
The two to out of the playoffs is just a massive swing.
It's crazy.
It is. It's very Bills. Very, very Bills. And to talk about the scenarios that will line up for the Chiefs, the easiest one is if the Bills beat the Dolphins in Miami, the Dolphins are coming to Arrowhead. No other games results matter. That's the only one that would matter for that matchup. So Dolphins is the sixth seed. They would be locked in there. The Chiefs are already obviously locked into the three. Tyreek and them would come to town for wildcard weekend. But if the Dolphins pull it off at home over the Bills, who struggle on the road and who kind of, you know, there's a chance that the Bills blow this one, certainly. Then you look at the next thing to look at is the winner of Jags and Titans. Now, the Jags are playing for the South. If Trevor Lawrence is healthy, which is kind of questionable right now, but he probably will play in this game. The Titans aren't very good. They have a 5-win team. I assume in this one that the Jags are going to take care of business. And if they do, then that Saturday night winner between Colts and Texans, if the Dolphins beat the Bills, then the Jags beat the Titans. The Colts-Texans winner comes to Arrowhead for wildcard weekend. But things get real weird if the Titans, the 5-win Titans, pull off a win over the injured Jags, along with the Dolphins beating the Bills. Because then you look at that first Ravens Steelers game on Saturday. And if the Ravens, resting Lamar and playing Snoop Huntley, if they beat the Steelers and all that other stuff happens, the Bills travel to the Arrowhead, which who knows about the combination of games here, but that would certainly be interesting. Or if the Steelers do go into Baltimore and knock off the Ravens and the Dolphins beat the Bills and the Titans beat the Jags, the Steelers in the juiciest wildcard matchup that the Chiefs could possibly have come into Arrowhead and combine that with those results, the Bills would miss the playoffs. If Pittsburgh, Jacksonville, and Miami all win this week, that's really what's at stake. That's kind of the AFC combos for the Chiefs. There's some other stuff there with seeding that doesn't really matter much to us, but big picture wise there, I mean, Dolphins at Chiefs is the most likely scenario, because I think a lot of people think the Bills are a better team than the Dolphins right now and are going to go into Miami and take care of business there and win the East and get themselves primed for a deep playoff run. So
the Bills are known for taking care of business. I mean, that team is never not taking care of business.
No, so, when the lights get bright, nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills, as they
exactly
say.
Exactly right.
So, yeah, but I mean, if that doesn't happen, if the Bills lose to the Dolphins, really all those other matchups there, Colts, Texans, and Steelers are all super, super juicy. There is the outside shot that the Bills come to Arrowhead, and that would be annoying for a first-round game, but that's the scenario. What do you think?
I think that I think I would like to play anyone but the Bills. I mean – it's a little bit of a mixed bag, because if the Bills, for us to play the Bills in the first round, they have to lose to the Dolphins. And I kind of don't think the Dolphins are that good right now. They just got blown out, first of all, by the Ravens. And the Ravens just blew out the 49ers Dolphins back to back. But the Dolphins are really banged up right now. They lost Bradley Chubb to an ACL injury. They already lost Jalen Phillips earlier this year. You know, I mean, that's basically their two edge rushers. You've taken away their two best edge rushers. There's not a whole lot of positions in the NFL where, like, if you lose your top two guys, you're going to be fine. But like edge rusher, wide receiver, you know, probably tackle, quarterback, obviously, like those premium positions, it's really hard to scheme around that. Like
nobody's three deep there. Nobody.
You can't scheme around losing your two best edge rushers. Like what are you going to do? Like you can't, that's not still.
They're going to have to win a shootout is what they're going to have to do. They're going to have to lean on their offense,
and that's possible. But you know, the Chiefs faced them at full strength earlier this year, held them to 14 points. And frankly, you know, that was one of the games. That was probably the first game where it became apparent the Chiefs had a second half scoring problem. You know, that was the game where the Chiefs were up 21-0 at half and made it a close game and had to get a stop on the final drive, you know, with the botched snap. So I wouldn't mind seeing the Dolphins. I don't really want to see the Bills, but you know, some of that comes down to the fact that we're 2-0 against Josh Allen in the playoffs, but now have a losing record against him in the regular season after, you know, losing to him again this year. And you know, eventually they're probably going to win one of those games. So I prefer to put that off as long as possible.
And I'm thinking about a scenario where if the Bills are the two seed and they're playing home games, that's pretty tough. to go into Buffalo and knock them off. It's not impossible, but it's certainly where they're at their best. And if the Bills are coming to Arrowhead in the wildcard weekend, that means they don't have any home field. That means the Chiefs are obviously going to get a team that, while they're desperate, they would have lost to Miami. So I kind of think if you're going to have to, if the Bills aren't going to be eliminated from the playoffs entirely with that Pittsburgh, Jacksonville, Miami combo, then like, who do the Chiefs trust more to knock the Bills out of the playoffs than the Chiefs at home? Like, I, you know, that's not bad if Miami's the two seed. Like, nobody's really that worried about that. And the Chiefs, if they beat the Bills in the first round, certainly could travel to Miami and beat them there. I mean, that's not really that intimidating of a game. But on the flip side, if the Chiefs have to beat Miami at home and then travel to Buffalo in the divisional round, like, that's a much harder road to the Super Bowl. So I'm kind of talking myself up, because I do see the scenario where if the Bills are coming to the Chiefs wildcard weekend, yes, that's a hard game. But like, the road after that does kind of open up for the Chiefs.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. No, it's going to be interesting to see how it all shakes out. Obviously, those four games are the ones that matter. We'll be, you know, watching from the first game on Saturday to the last game on Sunday night. But we can't wait to talk about playoff matchups next week with the Ringer's Randy Gisserli, friend of the show. He will be coming on to talk about the matchup. We'll have him on next week once we know who the Chiefs are playing.
Well, let's move on to what happened this week on the football field. And that is, of course, the Chiefs defeating their hated rivals in the AFC North, the Cincinnati Bengals, 25-17. And to do that, we're going to welcome in longtime friend of the show, honorary third member. You know him, you love him, on Twitter at InHarmsWay19. He does fantasy work for the Football Guys at Football Guys. And most recently, we will talk to you about this, the co-host of a new Cover One Draft Weekly podcast. You can find that on the Cover One YouTube page. Dan Harms. Dan, how the hell are you tonight?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. I'm going to ask how you're doing after saying that entire book's worth of information that you just read off on me. But honorary third member makes me feel pretty special. I appreciate that.
Yeah, man, the content's always banging when you're here, and Austin lets me do all the long, flowy intros, so I'm used to it by now, far from my first rodeo.
It's a little bit early for us to talk draft season, Dan, but we're always excited to get you on to talk draft. We'll definitely do that once the Chiefs season is over, but for now, we need to talk about the Chiefs season continuing. This obviously was a game that the Chiefs were playing to clinch an AFC West title, to clinch a playoff berth, something that they had the opportunity to do weeks ago and just sort of kept, you know, putting it off. But here we are in the new year. It's 2024 and the Chiefs did clinch. Did you have any general thoughts about this game? Anything that kind of jumped out before we get into the nuts and bolts of it?
Yeah, I think that the game against the Raiders, which we will not talk about after this allowed them to hit rock bottom. And I do believe that the Chiefs were always maybe trying to do that this season, because you can't look yourself in the mirror properly until you hit rock bottom, right? You can't figure out what's really going on with your team until you hit that point. I believe that they did. They came back against the Bengals and we saw fight. We saw energy. We saw them running the damn ball and physically outplaying the Cincinnati Bengals. They outplayed them physically. That's not something that the Chiefs have done since they played the Philadelphia Eagles, in my personal opinion. That was the game that they really, again, should have won, and they physically outplayed the Eagles pretty much all game long. And they did this against the Bengals. They came out and they said, we know what we have to do. Like, we understand. There were the reports that came out about they're going to simplify things. Now, this is something that also has been mentioned many, many times by myself and many people in the Chiefs Twitter sphere. We all talk about this. Stop getting so complicated. Run your plays. Run a basic passing offense. Take some shots when you get the looks that you did. And the Bengals offered some looks, and they took advantage of those. So my true feelings were that this game was a building block. Nothing more than a building block for the Chiefs the rest of the year, because it took some real reflectiveness to look in the mirror finally in week 17 and say, we can't do some of this stuff. We just can't do it. So let's get back to maybe something that we did in 2022 that worked really well. What's the one thing you guys remember about that team towards the end that they could do? It was run the ball. They ran the ball well against everybody, pretty much, outside of these same Bengals, funny enough, in the postseason. But they came out, they found who they were a little bit more, and they have to be able to lean on the run game for this specific team. Not going forward, this specific team. And it was a nice building block to see.
Yeah, I will obviously jump into that and kind of discuss that. And after we're done with this game, we'll kind of take a look at what you expect to see into the playoffs, because as you mentioned, this has to be a building block. If the Chiefs are going to have a deep postseason run this year, they have to get better from here, but this at least was an encouraging start. Let's start with a segment that we call the numbers, the figures. And we should start by talking about that AFC West title. The Chiefs had 8 AFC West titles after the 2015 season. Every other team in the AFC West had 15. This was an absurd statistical anomaly because the Chiefs had a very respectable record, and in fact had a winning head-to-head record against, I think, all of these teams.
Yep, that's correct.
Before the Chiefs went on their streak, and they've extended that, obviously, because they've absolutely dominated these teams in the Patrick Mahomes era. But now, after the 2023 season, with 1 week to go in the books and the Chiefs having clinched, the Chiefs have 16 AFC West titles. Every other team in the division still has 15. Last to first, baby. We're all Chiefs fans. I mean, we've all been watching the team. This is actually, I mean, we've been talking about this stat for years because it's been years in the making, and it's been weeks in the making this season. But it's still like pretty crazy that we were 7 back and now we're 1 up.
Yeah, and this is as much an Andy Reid stat as any of the ones that we've talked about lately, because obviously while Mahomes is responsible for the last 6 of them, you know, Andy won the AFC in 16 and 17 without Mahomes and really has been building this monster of a division dominant team for a decade now. And just really, really impressive that they went from last by a mile to first in 8 seasons. I mean, obviously the fact that the other 3 all had 15 is crazy in and of itself just going into that. But then the Chiefs were able to pass all of them at the same time. We're lucky to have Andy. We always talk about how lucky we are to have Pat, but the leadership on this team has been second to none so far in the last 8 years.
You know, it makes me think of culture. How different a team that consistently has talent. Like, we can't deny that these teams have had talent in the past, but there was just always something disconnective about the front office, the coaching staff, the players, right? There just always seemed to be something going on. You can't say that about this team. This team is top down. It is, everyone knows who won, who to answer to, and who calls the shots? Andy Reid. But he creates this culture that allows the players to have fun. And I think that we've seen this year, maybe not so much fun at times, but typically through practice, through creating plays on their own. We've heard interviews with Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, so on and so forth, talking about how Andy Reid allows them to have input on not just the playbook, but designing their own plays. And they run them in practice. They do this from training camp all the way through the postseason. And when you have that kind of, one, trust in the players to do these things, and the trust between the players and the coach to do that, I think you not only build a legitimate family, but a culture that you can sustain over the long haul. People have been poking holes in it this year, saying, well, Andy Reid's going back to what happened in Philadelphia. Right. No, not really. Really not the same thing. Patrick Mahomes is not going anywhere. This team is going to have the same type of culture. But when you're in flux, when something happens, you see a little bit of infighting in families, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone, there's usually some way, shape, or form where you just have some disagreements, and those usually work themselves out, typically, especially with the history that the Chiefs have. So when I hear the numbers, I hear the stats, it's as much Andy Reid stat as anything, like you said, but it reminds me that culture might be one of the most important foundations for an organization and a football team that most people kind of put to the wayside. So for everything, all the talent that the Chiefs had, the Patrick Mahomes, all that stuff, the foundational culture that Andy Reid brought in, that he fed, that he watered, that he grew, all of this is what we're seeing right here, right now. And the benefits of it are 8 consecutive AFC West championships. That's the true mark of greatness.
Well, it's crazy. Unbelievable. And to your point, Dan, what's crazy about that is, I mean, we should acknowledge the fact that for the Chiefs to have, you know, the sterling head-to-head records that they had against every team in their division, but still only have like half as many division titles as all those other teams had. Yep. That was a franchise that year after year was close, but could never seal the deal. And, you know, I mean, the Chiefs were finishing second a lot of these seasons. I'm sure that the Chiefs were, I have not done the math on this, but I'm sure that they finished second place more than any other team in the AFC West. And that's how you're able to get those records against your division opponents, but not be able to close and convert those into division titles. So huge props, obviously, to Andy Reid for turning this thing around and building one of the most consistent division winners. Now, I mean, the second most division titles in a row behind the Patriots, and the Chiefs will have an opportunity in the next couple of years to surpass that record, obviously. So, Taylor, I'm going to let you do this next one because you pulled the stat. This is an exclusive.
It is. I was doing some digging today on prepping for the show and was looking at the box score from the game and just thought, well, this is kind of weird. So I went back and used my friends at Pro Football Reference, did a little query. Since 1991, NFL teams are 1-214 when the following events occur in the game: when the team loses the turnover battle, when the team scores at most one touchdown, one or zero, when the team converts 25% or worse on third down, and when they allow the opponent to convert 50% or better on third down. When those four things happen, since 1991, NFL teams are 1-214 with that one victory being this past week with the Chiefs over the Bengals. So they pulled out, I mean, you know, some of those, the third down conversions, obviously the Chiefs are a better third down offense than 25%, and their defense is a much better third down defense this year than 50% allowing. But losing the turnover battle and scoring only one touchdown, I mean, that combines to just, you know, you got to kick six field goals basically in order to win that game. And as we'll talk about, the Chiefs did pull that off. So just one of the weirder game scripts, one of the weirder kind of, I didn't include time of possession in this query, but I'm sure if I would have, you know, the Chiefs only had 25 minutes or so, maybe 26 minutes of time of possession in this game. So they didn't hold the ball. They didn't really do much well, but they found a way.
My guy, I got to tell you, so that was one of the most random stat polls I have ever heard in my entire life. That is insane to just wrapping my head around that. Again, like you said, it comes down to a kicker. Like you have a kicker who goes 6 for 6. And honestly, what this tells me is that the Chiefs were able to move the ball so well, but Lou Anarumo once again showed his importance not only to the Bengals defense, but to how defenses this season particularly are really attacking everywhere. It's not just the Chiefs, it's everywhere. It's just you guys move the ball. That's fine. We're going to be at bend, don't break. But if you bend, don't break, you have to be able to score on the opposite side. Yeah. So again, we have kicker and defense. And the Bengals were held scoreless in this game for, I believe, like 6 minutes in the second quarter. And we're talking about, once again, a lockdown unit on the defensive side where this game's in hand for the large portion of the first quarter, the entire first quarter, outside of the Chiefs scoring that touchdown, the Bengals really had control of that game, right? And then in the second quarter, like, okay, guys, calm down. We're going to come in. We're going to lock down your receivers, and we're going to finally stop messing around at the linebacker unit. We're going to start shutting down your tight ends and your running backs in the passing game and force your backup quarterback to make some plays. But we're going to have good old Harrison Butker just continuously ripping kicks inside. Just rip them. It's 6-6. Don't matter, man. So that's an insane stat, but it shows you how the Chiefs kind of work together in this game. The offense moved the ball well, and the defense out to a rough start initially, but legitimately locked the Bengals playmakers down for the vast majority of this football game. And then you have your special teams coming in too, even with Richie James, who again admitted and took honesty and took control over his mistake and his return of that football from inside the end zone. You have the special teams, the defense, offense all coming together. It might have been one of their most complete performances of the season, funny enough, in this 25-17 victory. That's pretty insane.
Let's do one more little stat dump here before we get into the Chiefs system. Mahomes, 108 yards on deep passes. That's 20-plus air yards. His first game over 100 yards on deep ball since Tyreek Hill left the team, which is crazy. This included Rashee Rice's first deep reception of his career. Again, 20-plus air yards, which surprised me a little bit. Obviously, he's been closer to the line of scrimmage, but for him to get open down the field and for Mahomes to find him was great to see. And speaking of Rashee Rice, he now has the most receiving yards of any Andy Reid rookie receiver ever. And Andy's been coaching for a long time. DeSean Jackson had 912. Rashee Rice now has up to 938. He's passed DeSean Jackson. If he were going to play this week, which we haven't heard yet whether he will or he won't, he'd have an outside chance at 1,000 yards. But Dan, what have you seen? I mean, I know this was sort of a broken play, and Mahomes has talked about, you know, Rashee being able to make that adjustment. But is this something that we can hopefully count on and see going forward, Rashee Rice down the field?
I think so. And not just because this one time, that's what he was good at SMU. Like, yeah, he was a deep ball player. And I think the difference in this instance is that he's not just go route down the field. No, it's an adjustment based on the coverage and then the manipulation throughout the stem, right? He takes a little jab step to the outside, opens the hips of that cornerback, and then accelerates by him into open field. Now, they're not going to see a ton of single high safeties throughout, but this offense maybe makes defenses think twice about, hey, maybe we could bring some guys into the box a little bit more. Maybe we can play with a single high. I think this game showed the Chiefs that if they run the ball effectively and lure some of these defenses into a false sense of security, and specifically the way the deep ball has gone this season, you might be able to hit some home runs. But also, Rashee Rice is really understanding how the offense operates, his role in the offense, and that growth, that, again, understanding this corner right here is in my way from a single high safety and space. So what do I need to do? I got to move him out of my way. I have to create space for myself. That's the key in this situation, because in SMU, he wasn't like, I'm just going to move this guy. I'm going to just, it was more, I'm going to run downfield and then I'm going to dunk on his ass. And I'm going to figure it out down the way. Yeah. But it's a much different prospect here, because while he still has that, this entire season has been about making him understand space. Andy Reid's offense is scheming into space. That's all it is. For the most part, you don't really see any one-on-one jump ball situations, go get him kind of stuff. Right. So he's combining his understanding of his own body control and ball winning ability with now an understanding of space, a grown adjustment process. The whole, it really took the large portion of this season trying to figure out. He's really seen all that space work start to work out for him. And what we saw again against the Bengals was that he's starting to be used in different ways.
Yeah, he's really exciting. And, you know, when I saw the 100-yard number specifically there, what I first thought was it makes sense that Mahomes hasn't gone over 100, because when they hit the deep shots, they're not really home run deep shots. I mean, they're 30 to 40 yards. Little
Justin Watson 40 ball. Yeah,
exactly. And they've done okay on those without Tyreek. But they really, you know, this 67-yard pass ties for the longest pass of the post Tyreek Hill era, where there was a 67 yarder to Justin Watson last year against the Raiders to start the game out. That was like their first play from scrimmage, I believe, or second play from scrimmage. But other than that, I mean, this is the only other time they've gone over 60 through the air since Tyreek left. So certainly it's one where if Mahomes was to get over 100 in a game, he had to hit a couple deep ones where he hit this one. And then we'll talk about, but he hits another one to Watson in this game. And that's, you know, how he goes over it. But really, really excited about Rice and his prospects, and just kind of how, if they can start to stretch the field a little bit more, it just opens up it, you know, it's so complementary with the run game. The run game successful. Yeah. They pull people in, they throw over top. They start to, you know, respect that. Now you can pop off some big, better runs. So, I mean, the way that this team was playing complementary offensive football, if they can keep that up, they don't need a home run, like a 1A wide receiver in order to, I mean, they can play like they did last year and go in the Super Bowl, and that would certainly work for me.
Absolutely. Well, that brings us to the Chiefs system, and Taylor, this is your baby. So walk us through what we're going to be hearing here.
The Chiefs system, as those of you who've listened to the show know, is the system that the Chiefs use to come away with a victory in football games. It's modeled off the Dennis system, and it's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It's an acronym. We start off with C, create drama. I have in my notes here the Stavros stand-up line, fuck the Bengals, fuck Joe Burrow, fuck Skyline Chili. I mean, create drama with the Bengals is easy. All you have to do is play the Bengals, yeah, and the drama is created. And, you know, there's obviously all the shit talking that went on before the game and the animosity. And even though Joe Burrow wasn't playing in this game, the fact that the Chiefs were coming off a loss and the Bengals were playing for their playoff lives.
Yeah, I mean, did somebody tell Jamar Chase that Joe Burrow wasn't playing in this game? Yeah,
exactly.
Before he opened his mouth?
No, because he doesn't think. He just opens his mouth. But the drama was did a great job creating itself before the game started. And then just to add on a little bit there, the Bengals open up and go 15 plays, 8 minutes and 39 seconds, but they end on a field goal. They only travel 59 yards. And so the Chiefs bend, but don't break on defense there. The Bengals hit their first three third downs of this drive before finally succumbing on their fourth third down of the game and kicking the field goal. 3-0 Bengals. Chiefs get the ball. Drama officially created. Game on.
I tell you what, man. Drama, Chiefs, Bengals.
Right.
There is no better acronym. There's no better word for it. It's synonymous with the matchup. And I love the fact that L'Jarius Sneed had the opportunity, right, after this football game to cement the shit talking. And he said, look at the stats. That is the epitome of not only this defense, but the mentality that they have. You can talk all you want to Jamar, even after the game, which was ridiculous, by the way. He went goalpost moving on an all-time level, trying to get the attention off of him. Just kind of, I get he's hurt. L'Jarius Sneed's hurt too, buddy. Yep. He played the whole damn game.
Right.
Whole damn game. And here we are talking about, he won't fight me. Get out of here, buddy. Just get out. L'Jarius Sneed is what I think about with this. He took the drama there and he put it off himself and said, hey, y'all, go look at the stats. I don't have to say a damn word.
Yeah. So drama officially created. And then we move on to the H in the Chiefs system, handle adversity. So the opening drive touchdown by the Chiefs was a thing of beauty. They were efficient. They were effective. They go 7 plays, 75 yards. Their only third down they faced on the opening drive was 3rd and goal from the 8. And it was a beautifully designed play to get Pacheco in the end zone on a Texas route right over the middle of the field. You know, you look up, it's 7-3 good guys. Yeah, the defense gave up a lot of time and a lot of conversions on their opening drive, but they obviously didn't give up the touchdown. The offense, which had looked putrid in the previous week that we don't like to talk about, comes right out, bing bang boom, handles the adversity of the moment well, and next thing you know, we're feeling pretty good. This is a good way to open up the game, trading back and forth a field goal for a touchdown. How were you feeling? Did you feel that the adversity was handled
in a sense? I think that they did a good job of answering some questions on the opening drive, having a good game plan for that, you know, the first 15, whatever you want to call it. I think the adversity came a little bit later in the game when we saw them once again turn the football over. And then on the defensive side, the Bengals go down and score a touchdown. And we see another skirmish on the sideline between Charles Omenihu and Willie Gay. So we're like, what's going on here? Are you guys actually handling your shit in the locker room? Or are you guys still at each other's throats? So when I think about the handling adversity, I think back to the video clip that we got from Chiefs media of Willie Gay asking for a specific song.
Swag Surfing.
Swag Surf. And that was right there when I knew, okay, they feel a little bit different for this game. Mm-hmm. And that's a game, you've listened to the New Heights podcast. Mm-hmm. Travis talked about this game, that song. They hadn't heard it for a while. And, you know, they were like, you know, we need to vibe a little bit and need to get out and dance a little bit. And I think that's when they got back to themselves a little bit. So I liked how they took the fight, the fumble, and they kind of finally used it. They finally used it and then handled their shit afterward. And I liked what I saw after that.
I've been meaning to ask. I haven't looked this up or anything. You remember, I believe it was either last season or maybe the one before, the Chiefs were playing the Jets and everybody, the defense starts dancing on the field. There was that really good viral video of all of them dancing. I was trying to remember if that was the swag surfing or not. I don't know. I don't know if I'll have to look that up, see if I can find the video and know exactly what they were dancing to, because that's what I first thing I thought of, because that showing them all on the sideline, they were joyous. I mean, they were absolutely, that was, you could tell that song hits with that whole team, and you know, maybe they can bring that thing back moving forward. That could kind of be their little anthem.
It was confirmed today, by the way, you mentioned New Heights, Dan, that it was by request. That was sent up by the cameraman to Chiefs production, and they were able to get that song played for Willie. So I know Jason said, you know, he'd be out there requesting YMCA or whatever. Yeah. I think you got to respect a request like that when it's coming from, you know, one of the defenses, not necessarily one of the defense's best players, but certainly an emotional guy. And he knew what the Chiefs needed in that time. And that certainly helped them handle adversity.
Yeah. And then we go to the I, and that's Inspire Hope. And so around this time that they're dancing after the Bengals they scored, as you said, the touchdown to go up 17-7 at the time when the Bengals scored their second touchdown. The time of possession in this game was Cincinnati, 19 minutes and 31 seconds. Kansas City, 4 minutes and 6 seconds. Mm. They had over a quarter, over 15 minutes, and it wasn't even halftime yet on the Chiefs on time of possession. So they clearly, the Bengals had ripped off just long, excruciating drives, and the Chiefs weren't able to really, you know, counter that on their offensive side. But they desperately needed to get some points here. They were down 10. They needed to at least cut this to a one-score game. And the offense immediately comes out and hits Noah Gray for 16 yards, and then Isaiah Pacheco on a 21-yard dump down to get down to the Cincinnati 39-yard line. They weren't able to really do much there. They pick up 3 more yards, and then Harrison Butker walks out for a 54-yard field goal attempt. And, you know, he's been so good all year, only, of course, missing one kick in the deflated balls in New England, and then missed a kick against the Raiders when nothing was going right at all. But other than that, he's hit every other kick he's had this year. And I didn't have a great feeling about lining up a 54-yarder in the blustery winds at Arrowhead when nothing's going right. We're down 10. I just that kick just sailed, just absolutely beautiful. Cut the lead to 7 points. And then while we're on the inspiring hope part of it, the real inspirational part came when they forced that 3-and-out on defense. They swag surfed. They got the ball back. And then the first play from scrimmage, Isaiah Pacheco pops off a 37-yard run, his second longest run of the game, or his second long run of the game, his longest run after an opening 35-yard run in the opening drive. So they get the run game going. Pop runs out to the right side. They get down to 3rd and 3. MVS crosser drops an easy conversion. But Butker walks out. He just put a 54-yarder through the sticks, needs to hit a 43-yarder to keep the momentum on the Chiefs side, and of course nails it. And the Chiefs go into halftime as a 4-point game. It's 17-13, despite not really having the ball very much and not really, you know, feeling great about the two kicks instead of scoring touchdowns. But the hope to me was inspired. It was halftime. Chiefs only made it a 4-point game. How were you feeling about halfway point in this game?
That's when I was like, okay, well, they get the ball at halftime. Mm-hmm. They got some points on it. And typically we know the Chiefs lead the NFL and points scored closing the second quarter. They lead the NFL
by like a mile. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not even close. Like they're the best offense in the NFL. If you get them the ball with like 2 minutes left, like, hey, we'll just go put points on the board. You can take it to the bank. So I was pretty confident about the points there. I knew that the Bengals defense was going to be very good in the red zone. I just knew it was. And so when you can get points, some of them, I don't necessarily agreed with every kick that was kicked. There are a couple of them that I'm like, maybe you go for it here on fourth down. But that's not Andy Reid's way in games like this, specifically when you can ride a defense like they have been able to ride this defense all season. And I think what gave me the most hope about them, not just coming out of this game, but going forward, is that the defense shut down the Raiders offense all game.
Yes.
Right? In the last matchup, right?
Didn't complete a pass after the first quarter. Yeah. I mean, it was crazy.
And then the offense was just like, cool. That's awesome. We don't really care.
Yeah. No.
But this game, we saw another defense start to shut down the Bengals, and the offense was like, okay, we can take this and we can go put points on the board. It's not a touchdown, but they move the ball. They consistently move the ball. They took what was given to them, and they said, we can make something out of this. And then the last thing that really did it for me was after they forced that fourth down stop in the second half. The offense typically coming out of turnovers this season has been dreadful. Three and outs, not really doing much with the football. You can't do that going into the postseason. If you get a turnover in whatever shape, way, or form it is, you need to be able to put points on the board. I don't care if it's a field goal. I don't care if it's a touchdown. And this in turnover situations, it's a possession you quote unquote didn't have, right? You put points on the board. And they did that. They went, they got the ball inside their the 15-yard line. They go down, they kick a field goal. That was what I was like, okay, there's a little bit of a turning the corner moment here. You have all the adversity they faced this season, a little bit in this football game. They turned it into something nice, and that's what I like to see.
Yep, completely agree. So we come out of halftime. We're at the E phase in the Chiefs system, which is engage physically. The Bengals begin the second half by forcing a quick Chiefs three and out. A little frustrating that the offense couldn't get anything going after halftime. And then the Bengals go on their own 11-play, 74-yard drive that eats up another 6 minutes of the game clock. And they convert two third downs on the drive. And then they're faced with third and three from the Chiefs' eight. They hand off to Trevion Williams. He gets stopped for only 2 yards of the three. They line up fourth and one. They try a Joe Mixon run, but Willie Gay absolutely destroys the play, eats it up and spits it out, shoots the A-gap, just obliterates Mixon and behind the line for a 3 yard loss. And that's the fourth down stop you're talking about, where the Chiefs really, really imposed their defensive will when they had to have a stop. Because, you know, if the Bengals convert there, like, it's just, you don't know how many more points you're going to get when you're kicking field goals. And they needed to keep that offense in check. And certainly that was defensively the play of the game up until this point. And that's the turnover. And that's where you're talking about, where they get the ball. That's at their nine. And so they stop them there. And then, of course, they're able to march back down the field the other way. But in physically being able to not only run the ball, but stop the run, those are so important late in the year, close games, cold games, good teams. Like, you just cannot let the other team run on you, and you cannot fail to run the ball yourself. And those are the traits that you were talking about that this team needs to lean into. They need to be a run offense. They need to be able to run this football. And on the other side of it, they can't just let a team line it up and march down their throats. And in a bully ball, in a big time, big boy situation where you've got fourth and one in the goal to go, like, you have to be able to stand your ground there. And the Chiefs were able to do it, and they engaged physically.
They did. They created that turnover on downs as well. They mugged up, not exactly. Like, they took Willie Gay, and he was kind of off to the right a little bit. But they had both their defensive tackles lined up. So where you have, I forget exactly what his name is. I know Derek Nandi's in there. I think Mike Pinnell as well. So you have Mike Pinnell on the left and Derek Nandi on the right. And you have Derek Nandi kick out to the right and take the center with him. He's lined up like right on the left shoulder of the center. So he's attacking the guard. And then on the opposite side, you had Pinnell. Again, I don't remember if it's exactly those two guys, but this same formation, the two
defense. Wharton got some play in there too. He could have been involved.
It could have been Wharton. I don't remember. I don't have the play in front of me, so my apologies on my memory.
That's right.
So they pull this A-gap open by just attacking the guard of both the opposite sides of the center. But because of the way that they had Willie lined up behind the right side defensive tackle, and then they had him pushed across the face of the center, it pulls the center with him and creates this gigantic void. I also could be messing out which way the center went, so I apologize.
Sure. Concept remains posted.
I have it on Twitter, so you guys can find it on my page. But they created it. They mugged up Willie last second. They messed with the protections on this specific play, and it creates a huge turnover because Willie's not touched. Not touched at all, and he just blows into the backfield. So that physicality mirrored with the physicality in the run game needs to be a hallmark of this Chiefs team going forward. And when you can be physical and you can kind of identify what physicality you're good at and can lean into, we know that they're physical on the back end with the Jarius Sneed and Trent McDuffie, even Jalen Watson and Josh Williams, all those guys are physical.
Yes.
That seeps into the defense. That seeps into the defense, which seeps into, in my opinion, the offensive line. When they could get down, that all kind of injects itself into the way a team can operate. So getting physical sometimes, I think specifically for this team, might be a saving grace at this point in the season.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, when you think about, you know, the Chiefs certainly have made their mark in the NFL by finessing and by big passes and that's kind of how they kick the door down. And then at this point, if they don't have the big passing game, if they don't have that explosive offense that we're used to, you need to be able to have a new identity. You need to be able to adapt or die. And they're, you know, hopefully going to be able to adapt here. Of course, you then get to the F, that's finished strong. And the Chiefs turned that turnover on downs into an 82-yard field goal drive. And then the Bengals, four plays, quick punt back to the Chiefs. Chiefs need more points because they are now down by one, and they go 85 yards, kick another field goal, force the Bengals quick three and out, which is much, much, much needed at that point. And then, so they're trading punts for field goals. Chiefs, 13 plays, 39 yards, field goal. Bengals, three and out, and Richie James, who, yes, made the mistake of fielding a punt inside the goal line, but then runs another punt back to the Bengals 37 for, I think it was a 27-yard return there. And then the Chiefs hit their sixth and final field goal of the game with Harrison Butker. One more to take the final 25-17 lead going into the last Bengals drive. Finishing strong there on both sides of the ball. Yes, I know there are no touchdowns in this exchange. And yes, I know they need to clean up some red zone efficiency, some of their offensive finishing on their drives. But in general, to be able to trade points for no points, you'll take that every single time. You'll win every game you ever play if you trade points for no points. And to be able to consistently convert first downs for a while and march down the field and then kick, and then your defense immediately mans up and gets the punt and then go right back down and punch it back in the face. You can tell that the Chiefs' offensive line was holding their own, but more importantly, their defensive line was really working that Bengals offensive line. Like, even though the myriad of sacks don't come until the final drive, the just in general, the Bengals weren't able to push him around. They weren't able to do what they wanted to do on off. They weren't really able to protect Browning even when he wasn't getting sacked. Just really, really needed the strong finish after all the struggles this year and all the just, I mean, if the Chiefs dropped this game, it was monumentally important to be able to go out and beat a good football team before the playoffs. A strong finish. Nothing better for the medicine for an ailing team than finishing strong.
I don't know if it's a hyperbolic to say that them losing that football game would have spelled maybe the end of their season. There's so many different things that can happen to a mentality of a football team that you don't think you can get out of your own way. You can't find ways to win close games, and just everything's going wrong. So again, I don't think it's hyperbolic to say that their season could have ended last week had they not found a way to beat the Bengals. I don't care who's at quarterback. Everybody out there. I mean, Jake Browning.
Well, Joe Burrow's a system quarterback. So clearly, you know, Browning has been just as good as Burrow. I don't want to hear anything more about Joe Burrow. He's a system
quarterback. Oh, you're funny. You're a funny guy there. I like what Jake Browning was doing. He was playing really well, and the offense was very different in the sense that the ball was coming out quick. It's coming out short. Like, Joe Burrow does not have that same kind of offense. But what I did like about the Chiefs, again, early in the game, the Bengals could run the ball. They were running the ball. They were trying to get the Chiefs to have to guess what was coming, right? They had the run game. They had the passing game a little bit here and there. Ball was coming out quick. And to the running backs, the tight ends. That's what the big issue was. And then they said, enough's enough. You're not running the ball. And we're going to cover these tight ends and these running backs. And when you do that, that's when we saw the Chiefs say, hey, we're just going to physically outmatch you. Because there's nothing you can do at the wide receiver level that will work. That was the beauty of this game, is that, yes, Jake Browning is a backup quarterback, but you still had Ja'Marr Chase, T. T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd. Honestly, Tanner Hudson's been playing excellent football for them this year as their tight end. And Joe Mixon has still, I think he's been better this year than he was in the past, and very, very useful in the passing game as well. It catches the ball very well. So you have all the weapons still there, and it didn't matter. It didn't matter. And you can say all you want to about the offensive line. It was better this year than it was in the past. It's been better this year than it has been in the past. And none of that mattered when the Chiefs got out of their own way. Once again, started to trigger on the run fits, get them into those second and long, third and long situations. I say this every time I talk about it. Steve Spagnuolo is like, if you get 5 or 6 yards on a run on first down, he's just kind of sitting over there smiling with his arms crossed. He's like, okay, I'll give you that one. Yeah. Well, next time you're going for one or nothing. Guess what? Yeah. I'm going to come at you, buddy. Like I'm coming at you. And I love that because he's never phased. Nothing can happen. And when you finish strong in a game like that, when you have two sacks going into the final drive, and you end with six. I cannot physically understand some of how they're able to do some of the things that they do defensively, but trust in the defense, trust in the scheme and the players. You have the players to execute it, and they just dominated from the second quarter on in that football game on defense. They dominated the Bengals.
Yep.
That's the kind of performance that not just finishing strong shows, but you can carry. This has been all season. Honestly, it's been all season. The Chiefs defense has been this all year. And the fact that even after a letdown against the Raiders from the offense, this defense came out and did the same thing again. They're relentless. They always show the exact same thing every week in terms of how they play. You can win championships with this level of defense.
We've seen it a lot, you know? Yeah, I mean, running game and defense, that's like 30 of the 57 Super Bowl winners did that. Like, it's certainly a formula that, even though the Chiefs didn't really anticipate needing that formula, like, it can work. It can do it. Speaking of Spags, I don't know if you guys saw the funny Photoshop that was going around of Spagnuolo, which is a cornholio. It's got Spags.
Oh, that's good.
Up over his head. Really, really funny. Love that stuff.
Dan is going to hate this, but I did just have to jump in really quickly and give the listeners a quick side-by-side comparison of Joe Burrow and Jake Browning. Now,
system quarterback.
They have both played 500 ball. Burrow's 5-5. Jake Browning's 3-3. All right, Jake Browning has a higher completion percentage. He has the same touchdown percentage. He does have a higher INT percentage, but higher success rate, dramatically higher yards per attempt, 8.1 to 6.3. Are you kidding me? Now, of course, Joe Burrow was playing with that calf injury.
Don't mention that. That's
I get that. That's fine. Strike that from the record. higher quarterback rating, 96.5 to 91. Higher QBR, 58.5 to 53.1. I'm just saying. And look, 44 fourth quarter comebacks, game-winning drives. Mm. Jake Browning has two. Joe Burrow had none.
Man, you know, it's almost like they were going to be better off. They probably should trade Burrow, is honestly what they should do.
That's what they should do.
Browning is going to be cheaper, and they can afford talent around him, which they
can't. We got to stop trolling.
Yeah,
we got to stop trolling.
You can hear the steam boiling out of his ears from here.
This is my hell.
We got to stop trolling, Dan.
All right.
But we had to do it. We had to do it.
We did. We did. We're going to move on to Separate Entirely, where the Chiefs finally separate entirely from their opponent. And the Bengals, final drive. We've mentioned it. It was so weird. They start off with a 15-yard pass and a 5-yard pass, but then two straight sacks by Justin Reed, which was hilarious. And one of them was obviously, I think the first one, you know, Reed makes the play, and the second one, he's in the right place at the right time, which, again, plenty of sacks. I just have to have a guy in the right place at the right time. But Justin Reed picks up two sacks. They're facing 4th and 18. And they complete a long one over the middle to Tyler Boyd for 23 yards. But then back-to-back sacks by Chris Jones and Turk Wharton, I believe, was the last one. Let me confirm while I'm looking at it. It was Chris Jones. Oh, Karlaftis. Yeah, that's right. So Karlaftis gets a sack, and then Chris Jones cleans up on 2nd and 16 with a sack of his own. And then two incomplete deep passes, including the final play of the game to T. Higgins that falls incomplete. The Chiefs separate entirely. They win this game by 8. a game that they scored one touchdown in, but somehow 25 points because Harrison Butker's leg is inhuman. Separate entirely, you know, the Chiefs, they find a way once again to close the game on defense. They've been doing that a lot this year too. Just stepping up when they absolutely had to. Final thoughts on, before we get into our awards segment, final thoughts on the just kind of up and down nature of this game.
They got to find a way to now separate themselves entirely the rest of the season, like from what they've done. Like that, you got to use this as a tipping point, right? You found a way at the end to, again, go down, score, put yourself at an 8-point lead, and hand it off to your defense. That's not something that they've been really necessarily been able to do in terms of scoring and then handing it off. Mm-hmm. It's one or the other. It's like we have to get the ball back to our offense or we have to go score. Like that's kind of what we've seen this season. And even in the past, like it's been Mahomes that you got to go do something insane. Think about 13 seconds. They just scored a touchdown. Then Mahomes has to go get them into field goal range in 13 seconds to be able to win that game. So now the separate entirely for me is this now, this point in the season, 2023 is in the past. Mm-hmm. It's over. It's gone. Meant different, has to be a different mental state. So now, like you said, separate from what you did last year. I know it's an entire season's worth of football, but it's over now. You have to be able to cut that cord, flip the script now to 2024 and focus on the playoffs. So everything that they did right in this football game, build. Even though against the Chargers, you're going to see lots of backups and guys that don't play a lot playing, it's still an opportunity to focus on details and to pass off what you know and those details as the starters to those backups. You can communicate to them in game. You can communicate to your starters in game as well. So use it as an opportunity to continue to build off of the success in terms of moving the ball down the field, playing complementary football, running, and your defense, and separate from 2023 to 2024.
I have to jump in and say that I have said separate entirely on this show for probably 30 game recaps, and I got chills. I my hair stood up when he talked about separating from the struggles of the past Chiefs. I mean, that's the reason we bring on Dan Harms, because that type of perspective is chef's kiss.
Perfection. Oof. Let's keep him around for the awards, shall we?
Yes.
As our listeners know, we have three types of awards on this program, and we will each be giving out an award for this game. We'll go through this pretty quickly because we've discussed a lot of these players before, but we'll start with the five-star men. The five-star man! Who, through their play, scream, "I'm a five-star man." Then we, of course, have trash men.
"I'm the trash man. I come out, I throw trash all over the ring, and then I start eating garbage."
Who are eating garbage all over the field, and wild cards.
Wild card, bitches! Yeah!
Who are capable of anything. I will kick us off on each of these, and I have to give out my five-star man to L'Jarius Sneed. Dan mentioned it. We've discussed it. Did not practice all week. Still suited up. Still shadowed. I mean, easily a top five receiver just by his play on the field. I got in a lengthy conversation with a Niners fan of all people the other day about Ja'Marr Chase. And he said, "Oh, I see Chiefs fans calling him a bum all the time." And I'm like, listen, nobody is calling him a bum for what he's doing on the field. Okay. Like the fact that people are calling him a bum has everything to do with the fact that he's opening his mouth before the game and after the game and trying to get people to fight him and whatever. I mean, he's easily a top five wide receiver. I get that he wasn't 100% healthy. He certainly was healthy enough to push off on several plays. His sort of trademark separation move, which never gets called except on the DB. But L'Jarius Sneed, really putting a cherry on top of an insane season not to get worked up about who makes the Pro Bowl or who doesn't, because L'Jarius Sneed is a ridiculous Pro Bowl snub. I mean, he'll probably be on the All-Pro team, I would think, first or second team All-Pro.
Always funny when guys get All-Pro and not Pro Bowl. Very,
if there's any justice in the world, because what he's done against number one receivers is ridiculous. To go out and frankly for Spags to have the confidence to just send him out on an island and be playing, you know, shadowing Ja'Marr Chase without any practice reps really this week is remarkable. He absolutely deserves my five-star man award.
I completely agree. He's been great. I'm remiss to not name Rashee Rice in my award, so I'm just going to shout him out here. Had a great game. Sure. Love the kid. Very, very happy about his development. But we cannot have a five-star segment award and not name the kicker that kicked six field goals and literally put the team on his back and went on an 18-0 run. Three of those. Yeah, it was 17-7, and then he scored the last 18. Yeah, yeah. So Harrison Butker, the guy just is so reliable. It's so fun to have a kicker go out there, and you feel like not only does your team have a good chance to hit it, but that he might be the best kicker in the NFL. I all respect to Justin Tucker, who's incredible and had a good year himself this year. But like, if it's not Butker, they're right there neck and neck for the best kicker in the NFL. And
did you know that the Cowboys kicker has not missed a kick?
Yeah, Brandon Aubrey, and he's a great story.
It's crazy. He has missed several extra points though.
Three extra points and no kicks. Know? Yeah, no, but he's been awesome too. But I think resume wise and you know, if you had to go win a Super Bowl and you picked Harrison Butker or Brandon Aubrey, like I think you'd pick Butker.
Oh, 100%. So I mean, listen, the history of Cowboys kickers in the playoffs is
also that. Yeah, but just have to shout the guy out. He was incredible in this game. So necessary to have him go out there when the Chiefs weren't finishing off drives. Cause you know, let's say he misses one kick, a 54-yarder. Which is in the blustering winds at Arrowhead very easy to miss. Now the Bengals get the ball back at the end of the game. They're only down five. They could go win the game with a touchdown instead of just needing a touchdown to two to tie. The whole game script flips if he misses even one of these kicks. But he didn't, and he was great. He's my five-star man. Dan, who are you naming today?
I mean, Harrison Butker has clutch gene, guys. He's got the clutch gene. He does. And when you have a kicker like that, anything is possible. So I love that he's your five-star guy. I'm going with the one that really makes the engine right now of the offense work. When Isaiah Pacheco goes out there and he's running away from horror villains, when he's out there looking like he's biting people, when he's doing what he does, putting his head down and kicking the earth away from him.
Yes.
He is the five-star engine that could in this offense. And there is an injection that he brings. He's not the perfect running back. He's not. And that's okay. That we don't need perfect players. We need energy. The Chiefs offense needs energy. And this dude is the Energizer Bunny. He is never not going. He's never trying to not run somebody over. He's never just taking the easy way out. He's like, you guys want to be in my path? That's funny. I'm in your path. And you're trying to tackle me. Like, that's the thing, right? Like, you're not like, I'm not trying to do anything other than get you out of my way. And I go back to the game, I believe it was against the Eagles, where they were just getting behind him and pushing. Like, he would run into somebody, and the offensive line's like, we're going to get behind you.
Brotherly shove.
That's right. Yeah. Tirico.
Like, that was impressive. So, I don't disagree with you guys at all. These are all five-star players. Like, they are. They're on this team right now and what they've done this season, that they're five-star players. This offense needs Isaiah Pacheco. I'm a big Clyde guy. I think he's played fantastic this season, personally. But what Isaiah brings, physicality, energy, and just gets the offense kind of going, he's got to be my five-star guy.
Well, and how about the home run capability too? He hit a 35 and a 37 yard runner. I mean, that Clyde is just incapable of hitting. I mean, it's a different gear when Pacheco's out there. He's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's turn it over to the trash men. And you guys know that traditionally these are Chiefs players or coaches. Sometimes it's a play. Sometimes we get a little bit off script with this. I'm just gonna hit you with one right off the bat here. I'm picking the Cincinnati Bengals as my trash man. Listen, this team has never won anything, and I've never seen a team that has won less talk more. I just don't understand. Yep. And it's not just their players. It's their fans. It's their coaches. It's everyone associated. It's their moms. Their
mayor.
It's their mayor. It's everyone associated with the Cincinnati Bengals. Yeah. Just doesn't know when to keep their mouth shut. And listen, like, Jake Browning has played pretty well. Some would say better than Joe Burrow this year. It's fine. Maybe there's a quarterback controversy there, whatever. But like, if you're going to talk smack, like, be realistic about the situation. Like, understand, like, know your role and shut your mouth. Like, don't open your mouth if you know that you're rolling in an Arrowhead with a backup quarterback and a pissed off Chiefs team that's just hit rock bottom, you know, a two-time Super Bowl championship team that has just gone out and laid the biggest of eggs on Christmas Day of all days of the year. Yeah. And don't poke the bear. Don't do it. It's just, it's stupid. And then don't complain about them not fighting you after the game. Like, okay, let's be real too. Like, I mean this as a compliment, but like, you guys know about Legarius Sneed's background, like where he's from, people that he's lost in his family to, you know, different things. Like,
he would chew Jamar Chase up and spit him out in a fight.
Like, if they fought,
Jamar
Chase is going down in an instant, right? Like, there's just no chance that Jamar Chase is harder than Legarius Sneed. There's just no chance. And Legarius Sneed, the reason you know that is because Legarius Sneed said, check the stats after the game. Uh-huh. And Jamar Chase said, oh, he won't fight me. You know, like, he got put in a clown suit. The entire franchise got put in a clown suit. The entire franchise is trash, man. Fuck Cincinnati. Fuck the Bengals. Fuck Joe Burrow. Fuck Skyline Chili, etc.
Yes, exactly right. They're the worst. I love naming them as a trash man just because they bring out that emotion unlike any other team right now. Like, they're just the worst. They're the heels. You know, wrestling has the face and the heels, and the Bengals are the heels. They're very easy to hate, and they're bad, and that's a really good combo to be a heel. So I will completely shift gears and completely name someone that is adored in Chiefs Kingdom, but just had a bad game. And that's sometimes, a lot of time, the trash man is not about who we hate the most in the universe. It's just about going out there and not playing your best. And in this case, it was Travis. Travis Kelce was only 3 catches for 16 yards, had a drop. He was 32 yards away from getting 1,000 going into the game. I kind of thought that was a lock. And now they got to kind of sweat it out and finesse him into the first drive or so of this game this week to get him the final 16 yards. I mean, stuff that if he had gotten 32 plus yards in that game, he could just take the week off and not have to worry about anything.
Right.
You know, he's had still a very good year. We're obviously talking about him getting his 8th consecutive 1,000-yard season. He's only 16 yards away from that. That's remarkable for his age. And
he missed a game.
And he missed a game. So it's really only 16 games, which, you know, used to be the standard. But it's also about the focus that he gets from the other defense. Like, it is a hard-earned 1,000 yards this year for Travis Kelce. It is hard out there because everybody knows he's the alpha in the offense. Everybody knows that the Chiefs want to go to him all the time, and they play him as such. And that's just a really physically, to be a 33-year-old and out there, and 34 now, and out there just getting decked by guys. Just absolutely, you know, these 25-year-olds that are out there just laying him out every other play, and he still gets up and goes and catches a big first down or something. So, I mean, just all the respect in the world to Travis Kelce. He is the man. But in this instance, there weren't too many guys that I felt were worthy of the trash man this week. But 3 for 16, got to do better than that, bud.
Oh, man, you guys. I appreciate you leaving me for last, because this is the ultimate trash man. You all know it's coming. If you've been with me for this ride, you know what's coming. The rants, the long-winded talks on RGR.
The worst.
You guys.
Yeah.
I don't have my camera on, but if I did, I'd tell you to zoom in on me right now. Marquez Valdez-Scantling is the trash can of all trash cans on this football team.
That's just...
And this, again, coming after a week where all season this man has done nothing but run wind sprints and drop footballs. And Patrick Mahomes is getting tackled on a third down. And you have the audacity. No, the unmitigated gall to tell him to throw the football better. Okay, buddy, why don't you do what any high schooler, nay, middle schooler does, and put your hands behind you and catch the football, buddy? And then on the deep ball, You have your hands outspread like you're trying to hold two different things instead of looking for the football and catch it with both of your hands in a basket. No, over here looking like a damn dinner plate on two hands. So I'm done with this trash can here. I don't want to see him anymore.
I mean, honestly, a trash can could 100% catch the ball better.
Sure,
I mean,
got a lid. You just know, open the lid.
Yeah, that's right. Just open the lid. Mahomes just pops it in
drop
there.
Drop it right in
there's,
there.
And there's no chance that a trash can would have worse ball skills because, let's be honest, like, you know, it's
how
not
can
like
be
he's
worse
really bringing,
than zero.
Yeah, exactly. He's not really bringing anything to the table there either. Incredible Grant. I mean, he's like an all-time. I mean, like, I tweeted this the other day. Like, it's crazy because he was an integral part of a Super Bowl winning team last year. And I was at Taylor and I were at the Bengals game, you know, where he went off. He was the only wide receiver that really did anything at all in that game. They needed him. He, you know, without his performance in the AFC Championship game, they probably don't make it to the Super Bowl. They don't win a ring last year. It's crazy for a player to have done all of that less than a year ago. And for me to loathe him to the level that I do right now. And it's not just his performance on the field, which is terrible, but like you were saying, I mean, to have the audacity to basically tell your quarterback to throw the ball better. I mean,
I saw some people interpreting that what we're talking about is after the ball hits him kind of in the back hip. I mean, it's not the most perfectly placed ball in the world, but you're an NFL like, wide receiver.
Again,
and he got both
middle
hands.
Middle schooler should catch.
Exactly. Yeah, but he puts both of his hands down on his right hip as that ball. And I saw some people trying to defend him like, oh, maybe he was like pissed at himself. Like, I got to catch that. And like putting his hands down there. But like if MVS had been a player that was outspoken about taking his own responsibility for his struggles and his own, you know, like if his attitude was better, then I would give him the benefit of the doubt there. But his attitude's been shit. He's been, he's been talking about, you know, when they said, well, all your struggles this year, and he goes, what struggles? And they're like, well, you know, you've been awful. You've been terrible. And he's like, nah, man, that's every wide receiver in the NFL. Like he doesn't even, he can't even just have the maturity to step up and say, I know I've been playing poorly and I know I've let the team down and all the stuff that you would expect out of mature leaders. That's the other thing. He's not a rookie. He's not this isn't freaking George Pickens out there being insane. Like this is a vet. This is a guy that should understand his responsibility on the team. And instead, I mean, I'm so glad that Dan, of course, this was the home run of all home runs for a trash man. And he's not even a trash man. He's a trash can to Dan.
That's because a great way to do it.
He doesn't even qualify as being a man. So it's been rough. I do not like to shit on guys if I can help it as dudes. I like to, if a guy struggles on the field, we have no problem on this show talking about their struggles on the field because that's what the show's about. But like, I don't like to say that I don't like a guy or I don't want him on the team or whatever, but like MVS has worn out his welcome and then some on this team. And sorry, but good riddance.
Yes. 100%. Let's go to our wild cards. These are players who are capable of anything. I will kick us off with Justin Reed. Now,
love it.
Listen, I could have just gone. I mean, there were a lot of worthy five stars this week. We had three of each award. You know, could he have fit in there somewhere? Two aspects to this that make this a wild card performance and not a five star performance. I mean, first of all, listen, the five stars that we chose in this game were. We're deserving, but
we left out Rice. I mean, that's
yeah, exactly. Number one, this man was out liking tweets before the game in like full on Tyrann Mathieu mode, where he's like, I'm not going to talk in the media, I'm not going to say anything, but I am going to let you know that I see your comments and I'm using them as motivation. Just put them a like on here and there, you know, it's subtle, people have to be checking that stuff. You know, like it's just one of those things move. that is wild card behavior. And then on Sunday, he was playing like a wild man out there, second on the team in tackles, seven solo, eight tackles total. And then on the final drive of the game, this is true wild card behavior. I mean, for a defensive back to get back to back sacks with the game on the line, that is, I mean, listen, there's some Steve Spagnuolo in there, but like, for him to have that trust in the player, obviously, to send him, and then for, you know, him to have the wherewithal to pick up the second sack, you know, we already kind of talked about it, a little bit more of an effort sack. I mean, Again, a defensive back getting two sacks in a game.
You know how many career sacks he had going into that drive?
No.
Take a stab.
Two.
He's been playing since 2018. He had four career sacks going into that game and two on that drive.
Two on back-to-back plays. I mean, that is wild. That is wild card behavior. So that's my pick, Justin Reed.
I love it. And he was obviously a big part of the vibes and the, you know, Justin Reed's been a really good pickup for free agent acquisition that came in that, you know, was supposed to replace this monolith in Tyrann Mathieu that was such an integral part of the early success of the 19 and 20 Chiefs, but then had kind of worn out his welcome with all of his talk and Reed comes in and he's been, you know, he's kind of put his foot in his mouth a couple times, mentioned that he didn't know, was it the Bengals tight end it was?
Tyler Higbee.
Actually, oh yeah. It was Tyler Kraft or some other, whoever the Bengals were trotting out there. Anyway, like Justin Reed, Tyler love Kraft. The pick as a wild card. He's been funny. I will go with another defensive player because this game had some wild card defensive players all over the place. And I'm picking Willie Gay. Not only for the big fourth down stop that turned the tide of the game there when the Bengals were driving, but of course we also mentioned his request for swag surf, and that was a shift in momentum that I don't think anyone understood watching the game broadcast level, but going back and understanding that at that point in the game the Chiefs needed something, they needed some swag, they needed some just juice, and Willie Gay's always provided that. He's always been a guy that is there for the energy and is there to pick people up. And I mean, it just his energy on the field and on the sidelines has been really notable. And for him to know what the team needed, he's been around the team long enough to know like, hey, this is going to work. Like go put it on. I'm telling you, we need it. And then for all the guys to respond the way they did and then go out and kick their ass, just a lot of fun and extreme wildcard behavior. So Willie, congrats, bud.
You know, Willie Gay is kind of, well, he was more of the picturesque player of the Chiefs' defense of the last couple of seasons, right?
Yeah.
Where they're maybe more bend break, they allow some big plays, but they're going to come to play near the end of the season and into the postseason. And when game times matter, like that's what it cranks it up to 11. So while Willie is like the name that I'm going to associate with him with, I think that perfectly fits where he is and why he should continue to be in Kansas City, because he just brings something that you can't account for all the time. And that's truly what does make him a wild card. For me this season, it's been another defensive player, which is interesting to say the least, but it's George Karlaftis.
Furious George.
The Chiefs boast one of the 10 lowest pass rush win rates at defensive end in the NFL. I believe that they are, they're like the 20th in the NFL. It's not great. The 22nd in the NFL. It's not great for them this season in winning quickly, specifically. And most of this football game, we heard crickets. We heard crickets from good old George Karlaftis. Fourth quarter rolls around. Bengals become very predictable in what they're going to do because they can only throw the football. And what does that mean? That means we got some one-on-ones brewing in Kansas City Chiefs pass rush.
Yeah.
And we get George Karlaftis lined up against Orlando Brown Jr. And we get a wide nine. For those of you that don't know, a wide nine is just when you take the defensive end, kick him out a couple of feet, and have him turn a little bit towards that tackle. So where he's rushing, like draw a line from the defensive end to the quarterback. That's kind of how you want to see a wide nine. You don't want to like right up on the shoulder where he has to go in more of a J. No, we're going directly to the quarterback, but he does a little bit differently. He gets some speed up the right side and turns this into a J, because let's be honest, George Karlaftis isn't exactly the best athlete in the world. He's not going to bend the edge there, but instead he's going to work the edge and he's going to build up some speed. He's going to swipe the hands away from Orlando Brown Jr. and close on the quarterback. This guy, for everything coming out of Purdue, again, I would not have drafted him. I still hold to that to this day.
But I remember. That's
my opinion. And that's fine. But I can hold that opinion and also say that when he's playing at his peak level, he drastically improves this defense and where they can get after the quarterback and how they can manipulate offensive lines. They can move him to defensive tackle. They can move him to almost nose tackle. They also drop him into coverage at times. So he is, in essence, a wild card because the way that the Chiefs play defense with their defensive ends, they can do anything with them. But he does turn it up in some of these big moments. In some of these big games, he was quiet for a large portion of the last maybe month. In this game against the Bengals, I think he kind of felt the moment. And honestly, before the game, Ryan and I, you know, RGR Football did our pregame, and I challenged George Karlaftis. And I said, look, this has got to be a game where you come to play because you're about to hit 10 sacks. This was on last Friday. So he did. He finally hit, you know, he hit double-digit sacks, the first non-Chris Jones player to do it since D Ford, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, that's crazy.
And when you have someone that can do that a little bit here and there, even though a lot of them are cleanup sacks, this one was a true win. It was a true win one-on-one with Orlando Brown Jr., and it was a good win. It wasn't just Orlando Brown being bad. It was a good win. He built up speed, he used technique, and he cornered. That's the kind of wild card that you need on the defensive end, somebody that you can pair with Chris Jones, that you can pair with Charles Menehue, and get that third pass rusher going. So George Karlaftis, Furious George, as it has been benounced upon you, you are my wild card for this game.
It's perfect. It's great to close the book on this one, but before we let you go, Dan, let's just pretty quickly go through a couple of questions that we had looking into the playoffs. So, first of all, we earlier in the show went through the playoff scenarios. Obviously, the Chiefs have the possibility of playing any one of five teams. They're locked into the 3 seed. Dolphins, Colts, Texans, Bills, and Steelers. Just really quickly, let's rank. Let's have you rank from the team you'd most like to see to the team you'd least like to see of those five. So Steelers, Bills, Texans, Colts, Dolphins. Who would you love to welcome in to Arrowhead in 2 weeks?
Mason Rudolph, come on down.
Sure.
That's right.
Telling me, but I'm not that worried about the Steelers defense. I know that they have good players. I think structurally, I'm not too worried about it. You got some aging players and some good players, but this comes down to Mason fucking Rudolph, man.
Sure, it's don't believe Christmas. In Mason Rudolph. That's fair.
It's not Christmas. Like, this is Rudolph coming to town, guys. I'm not too worried about him being out there and doing much against this defense. I know Steve Spagnuolo would have his head in a blender, and he's probably the one guy that I'm like, yeah, let's play another wild card game against Pittsburgh, because that was their last game was against Pittsburgh, right? Against the last
42-21 worked out well,
if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, bring him in.
Yeah.
So who do you have after the Steelers? I feel like that is an obvious choice. That would have been my pick as well. But then I think things get a little bit muddled. You obviously have Colts, Texans. You've got CJ Stroud, Bills. Who's great, but the Texans have been banged up elsewhere. They lost Tank Dell. They haven't been nearly as explosive on offense. You've got the Colts, who have been riding with, you know, Gardner Minshew, their backup quarterback, pretty much all season. They've got a couple of playmakers on each side of the ball, but not a tremendously deep or talented team on paper. And, you know, then you got the Dolphins, who, I mean, they just lost their second pass rusher. They lost Jalen Phillips early in the year. They lost Bradley Chubb, you know, to an injury inside of 3 minutes in this game where, you know, they're down by 3 scores in the fourth quarter. And that's a tough look for them, obviously. Like, who ends up here in the 4-4-3-2 spot?
Yeah, so this is how I've got this. It's the Steelers, and then it's the Colts, then it's the Texans, and then it's the Dolphins.
That means I agree.
The Bills would be there. So,
sure.
Again, this is the quarterback situation for me with the two teams at the worst. I believe that, you know, Mason Rudolph is the worst of these five quarterbacks by a large margin.
Sure.
And a little tier jump up from him is Gardner Minshew, which, mm-hmm. honestly, they kind of play, at least right now, kind of the same way, where they will just throw the ball down the field.
Good point.
And the difference between the Steelers offense and the Colts offense is that I have much more faith in the Colts offense to run their RPO game well, to run the ball effectively. I think their offensive line's much better in Indianapolis than it is in Pittsburgh. And their ability to run it with Jonathan Taylor and still have some of that play action game built in. Alec Pierce is, you know, their deep threat guy, but Michael Pittman's a good player. He's not a number one, he's a number two, but he's the one in that system. And combine him with Josh Downs, who's a very very good player. You guys all know that I loved Josh Downs coming out, and yes, he's been fantastic as a rookie. No shock to me. So they have a good complement of wide receivers with their run game, and the way that Shane Steichen is operating the offense there in Indianapolis is really, really good. So RPOs, play action, run game, all that kind of works. That's why I have them over the Steelers. And the reason we have it here from here on out as CJ Stroud with the Texans, if he had Tank Dell and the full array of their weapons, I might switch him with the Dolphins. I'll be very honest with you.
They were rolling when they were healthy. I mean, they were nasty.
Great. They were fantastic. The one thing is that they couldn't really run the football, which kind of levels out against the Chiefs, because it's like, well, their deep run defense isn't great. You might be able to get some. And plus, Devin Singletary taking over the last month or so has been a revelation to the run game. Yeah, I'm still a big Damian Pierce guy, but they've talked specifically about the scheme change that it was going to be, and that's the reason they brought in Devin Singletary. He runs that outside zone scheme much better than Pierce this year, who has been learning it and getting better. But CJ Stroud is the real deal. This is not your average. You know what? If we're lucky, this is not quarterback rankings, because he would be the second quarterback I would not want to see.
Sure,
I'm not scared of Tua. Not scared of Tua. I know what Tua is. Highly anticipatory, accurate thrower that we've seen this season already. I'm not that worried about that, to be very honest with you. It doesn't scare me. And their offensive line is doo-doo butter. Like, it's bad. It's real bad. So I'm not worried about that. And so, yeah, CJ Stroud's the real deal. That defense is also very underrated. They get after the pass rusher, and they have some young guys on the outside in Derek Stingley. And there's a couple other corners out there. The mind has escaped me right now, but they're playing above their level, in my opinion. But
they've been awesome. What do you think about a rookie quarterback maybe playing the longest football season of his life right now and having to go play the most important games after he's been taking shots for a full year? He's already missed some time
Steve Spagnuolo.
Against Steve Spagnuolo. Yeah, like I feel like if it ends up being the Texans, that's at least what I'm going to lean on positively going into the game, is like, it's still a rookie quarterback. I like him a lot, but I at least feel more comfortable with him than if it was a veteran that plays exactly like he does.
No arguments at all. But the one pushback I'll give you is that CJ Stroud went into a game against Georgia defense.
God.
And fucking lit balled.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, he did.
But he should have won that football game. So
yeah, true.
I hold that he is a guy that can find a way to make it work, except I do believe Steve Spagnuolo would be throwing things at him that he hasn't seen before. So there is always that. So again, the offense in Miami is the real catalyst here. It's Mike McDaniel. I'm worried about Mike McDaniel and the way
they
attack.
Sure. And he's already seen the Chiefs once, which is
gives
worrisome.
Him more ammo.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's that. And then again, it's the top team right now. There's been a little bit of interesting things happening in Buffalo since the Chiefs have played them. Their passing game is not very good. It's pretty bad since Joe Brady
took over. What happened to Stephon Diggs?
Stephon Diggs, I believe, is hurt, but we'll never know. I think he's hurt. But their scheme's kind of simplistic in terms of Joe. I think what happened is that Joe Brady took a lot of stuff out to try to simplify the offense and run the ball a little bit more. But in doing that, they've also taken away one of their best weapons in Dalton Kincaid. He's basically been rendered useless, essentially. Like, you bring back Dawson Knox, and, we're going to throw the ball to him instead. If you want to use your rookie first-round draft pick that you brought in. But that's neither here nor there. So the team, again, Buffalo is still the team that I wouldn't want to face the most. But my confidence level of the Chiefs beating these teams, especially these top three teams, is all pretty. It's pretty much the same. Like, they can beat any one of them. Like, there is one team that I have questions about the Chiefs beating on the AFC side. It's the Baltimore Ravens. Mm-hmm. Anybody else, I'm like, I know they can win that football game.
One thing I think about, if Buffalo was the team. And of course, that does require the longest shot of any of the combinations in week 18 to happen. But that requires that they went into Miami and lost when they had the AFC East on the line, that they couldn't go on the road and win a big game against a team that's kind of limp into the finish line, like we talked
about.
Not
only that, but has been terrible against good teams this year.
I mean, and Miami Dolphins, has, correct. Yeah, yes, that's right. And so if they were able to take care of the Bills, you also look at Josh Allen's home road splits this year. On the road, he has a passer rating of 80. He has 9 touchdowns and 9 picks in 7 games on the road. And then you would add to that whatever he struggles with in Miami to lose that game. And I would at least feel like, and you know, the Chiefs played right with him when the Chiefs have been struggling themselves. And that was a 4-point game that they could have, not for one foot, been, you know, won that game. So, yeah, I definitely feel that I agree with the rankings 5-1, but I don't think any of these teams are a really scary matchup. And you have to then consider that, you know, the Dolphins, if they come in, they would have lost to the Bills at home in a must have AFC East showdown that then that sends them to Arrowhead. So like, you know, these teams are gonna be coming into this thing off of a game that both of those two teams off a game that they lost. And just a really interesting setup there. Let's real quick talk about the Chiefs. They've been so hard to figure out. The offense has played well for little stretches, but been just a complete disaster for other stretches, worse than the Mahomes era by a pretty healthy margin, which includes 2021 when they were bad. The defense has been the key to the team. They've been so solid, but every now and then they kind of forget that they're good and they can let a kind of poor offense work them a little bit over, but that's the NFL for you. The Chiefs have just comboed their worst game of the year and really of the Mahomes era, or one of them, on Christmas with one of their best and most complete games against the Bengals. So how do you feel? What are you expecting the team moving forward in the playoffs? Do you feel that they're there, they're not? What's the story?
This is I believe they hit rock bottom 2 weeks ago, and that was for the better. It forced them to have to make some of their offensive calls a bit more simplistic. And that's not necessarily saying that they're dumbing down the wording in the plays. It's just that it's more of a, here, run the ball here, play action here, throw the ball here, Patrick, get through this read, this read, this read. And when you get everyone back to the basics, I think that it reinforces the details that they worked on in August and in July, all those days they spent getting back into training camp and focusing on the basics. That's kind of stuff you need to be having right now. And I'm still not 100% like, you know, bought in on what this team's going to look like. We have too much evidence against the contrary. Like in this game against the Chargers this week is not going to give us any more off of it. But I do think getting them locked into the 3 seed is beneficial, because it's going to be a pseudo bye week for their starters. Mm-hmm. And that's huge for a team that has played the most football over the last 5 years of any team in the NFL. They've played the most amount of games. That wears on Patrick, on Travis, on, you know, all of your offensive linemen outside of the two new tackles, mm-hmm. and all of these skill players that are young. This is going to allow them an opportunity now to see how it's done. You guys remember the 2021 postseason, or even regular season, where the Chiefs kind of just fell into the postseason. Like it wasn't great. Yes. A lot of the same kind of things this year to a worse degree. But then, even with the second half against the Bengals, they were rolling in that first half.
Yeah.
They blitzed the Bengals.
They looked so good.
They blitzed them. I know, obviously, it's a different team with Tyreek Hill. All that stuff is different. But the structure, the culture, and the backbone of this team is still there. And the defense, I tell you right now, this defense is not just elite. It's a top 3 unit in the NFL. Mm-hmm. I say that with a straight face. Mm-hmm. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care about what the numbers tell you. I can tell you what my eyes say.
Right.
And to be able to win, you have to, at some point, throw the football.
Yeah.
What does Steve Spagnuolo want you to do? He wants you to throw the damn ball. And I do think that teams talk themselves into throwing the football more against Patrick Mahomes. We've seen it. It plays right into Steve Spagnuolo's wheelhouse. Yeah. So there is not a team in this entire postseason on this side, except for the one in Baltimore, that I would say I'm scared of them running the football against us. That's it. And even then, we're talking about Gus Edwards.
Sure, Gus Bus.
Justice Hill, bro.
I like him. I like them, but they are not world beaters running the ball.
It's not J.K. Dobbins. It's not the rookie that they had go down. So
Mitchell,
who was Keaton fantastic. Mitchell.
Yeah, he was awesome. Right. It's Lamar a lot of times, which is not really something.
Not
I mean,
this season either.
Have handled him well, and you're right, and not really this season. Good points for sure. I mean, I think they have the capability. They've just now got to go out and build, like you said, separate from their stuff that they've been doing that hasn't been working, and figure it out. Super appreciate your time as always. This is so much fun to talk ball with you. Before we go, please let us know about Cover One Draft Weekly podcast, what that's all about, and where people can find you.
Yeah, so about 2.5 weeks ago, actually, this moved really, really fast. I was approached and I was asked, you know, I know you don't have any time, but could you sacrifice more of your time and not do anything else and do this podcast with Cover One? And I was like, yeah, sure. You know, I know that I'm going crazy, but I'm good.
Love the game, bro.
I'm good to do this. This is my life. Now it really is. I legitimately get to say that this is my job, which is fucking insane.
Yes, that's great.
So every week, my co-host and I, John Helpkamp, will be talking draft. Of national perspective, we'll be talking about prospects, players, and we just recorded our first episode today. We're recording this on Thursday, so that will be coming out. I'll be retweeting it for everybody. You guys, most of you do follow me, which I'm very, very appreciative.
Harmsway 19.
That's right. So yeah, we've got that going now. And obviously you guys know, again, this is not my first time here. RGRfootball.com. We do all of our stuff. I just did a video on really the Chiefs defense, but a really good, nice focus on L'Jarius Sneed. He's going to be an all pro. And that's up there right now. We've got NFL 33, which will have more of my content there when draft season hits full. It's really hard for me to write articles in the middle of Chiefs season. And I don't get much time to do that. And then now we're turning focus really to the draft for me at Football Guys. And I'll be doing more breakdowns, little info videos, like 5 to 10 minutes here about prospects, things like that. And we'll have more content as the season dips away here to the off season.
Hardest working man in the game. We appreciate you. Can't wait to talk to you next time. And we'll see how the Chiefs fare here coming up in the playoffs.